As I know that we have some that have been kind of in a tough place for a while, and that's just a kind of reminder that time doesn't stand still. You're not stuck where you're at. Things will continue to move on, and God is renewing things day by day. And so if you'll just hang in there and you'll just trust in Him, things will indeed change. And among those things, and this seems to be the time of year where a lot of people are looking for resolutions. It's something that most people make and then they break shortly after that. But I'm just going to encourage you just a little bit as we talk about the friendship thing. You guys started it off. And within my group, we talked about what it takes to move into that inner circle. And one of the biggest things that came up in there was time. Yeah, I mean, a true friend, it takes time. It just does. And I'm going to challenge you in this new year to see if you can't move Jesus into one of those slots, into Him being really in that friend category. And, you know, you can spend an hour a week with them, but that's not a lot of time. It's like getting to know somebody here at church. If you really want to get to know them, you're going to have to spend some time with them outside of class. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have to spend some time with them outside of here. And the more time you spend with them, the more you get to know them, the more you get to trust them. It's the same way it is with everybody else. If you want Jesus to move into that friend category, you're going to have to spend some time with them. And so, guys, I'd like to encourage you to make that one of your New Year's resolutions, to spend a little bit more time with Jesus than you have in the past. And with that being said, guys, we're going to move from the manger where we were last week back to the upper room where we are this week. And we've been in John for a while, and that's okay. Some of Jesus' most profound teaching comes in the upper room on that last night of his life on earth. And Jesus will continue to teach his disciples all the way to the very, very end. And we're getting closer, guys, just so you know. Today, he'll be teaching on love. He's going to remind his disciples about the way that he has loved them. And then he's also going to challenge them to love others in that same way. So let's go into, actually, John chapter 15, beginning with verse 9. That's where we left off a couple weeks ago.
As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love.
So Jesus says, I've demonstrated to you the way that God loves by loving you the way that he has loved me. Okay? And we're going to talk about that just a little bit. We're going to get back into the way that God loves. But first I want to go back to this word. And guys, I particularly chose to have you read out of the ESV this time so that we can encounter that word abide. Abide is one of those words that we don't see too often. I mean, when's the last time you used that in your common everyday talk? Ever? Okay? And so that's one of those words that we don't use it very often, that we sometimes don't really recognize exactly what that means. Okay? And some translations talk about remain in my love. But I like abide. So now we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about what that actually looks like. Because so often we read a word and we don't really understand it, and so we just skip over it, we just blow past it. But what does abide in the love of Christ, what does that look like? I mean, what does that really mean? Well, if we go to the translation, okay, abide means to remain very, very close. And so that's why in some translations you see just remain in my love, okay? But in this particular case, it literally means to have the love of Christ completely wrapped around you, to be clothed in God's love. And so I'm going to kind of see if I can use a little bit of an analogy to bring that to life for you. And I don't know if you can relate to it. This was one that was a little bit hard for me when I go back to my father. Because my father was, and we just spent a couple of days with him over Christmas, and he still is how he always was. My dad's a hard guy. He's a tough guy. And he's not a very affectionate guy. You know, I know that he loves me and he loves all of his kids, but he's not very good at expressing it, not verbally and not physically. I mean, hugs were far few between, you know, when I was a kid growing up, and so were words of affirmation, all right? And I can remember when I was just the littlest tyke, and sometimes you little kids get scared at night, and they come and they knock on mom and dad's door, or sometimes they go in. My parents always kept their door open, but so you come up to the bed, and it's just like, I'm scared, hoping that you'll get the invitation. Okay, come on in. You know, I'll hold you. I don't know whether you let your kids in bed with you or not, but that was not something my dad was willing to do. He was never going to have a kid between him and my mom. Okay, and so it was always got the same response, go back to bed. Or he would get up and he would take back to bed and tuck you in and say, you're okay, now stay in here. Okay. However, there were times, and they were only a few of them, and they stopped at around the age of six. My goodness, somewhere along the lane, my dad decided that once you get past 6 years old, you shouldn't get any like real physical affection. Okay, but before that, because we had a TV in our family room, okay, and not a lot of furniture, and so usually the kids, we would lay on the floor and watch TV. It was back in the days where everybody had carpet, you know, so we had carpet on the floor, and there were big pillows that my mom had made, and we laid on the floor and watched TV. And sometimes, my dad would come down on the floor with us. And every so often, depending on what was going on, you know, you kind of inch over closer to him, inch over close to this big body, you know, and every so often he would kind of turn and reach over and grab you with that big arm of his and pull you in close, you know, and just hold you tight. My gosh, there's never a feeling that I can relate to like that. It's like super safe and super secure and you're all warm, and it's just like I really, really felt loved by my dad at those times. Unfortunately, it didn't happen very often. I wish it happened more often, okay? But when I think of the word abide in my love, that's the picture that I have in my head. That's the feeling that I remember, okay? So I want you to lock in on that. Can you guys relate to that or not? You know, I don't know how your parents demonstrated that, or maybe somebody really struggled with it because you didn't have very affectionate parents like my dad was, okay? But whatever that, and I had a long talk with Nicole about what that looked like for her. Okay, but lock into that super secure, super close, super safe, super loving feeling. That's what it means to abide in the love of Christ or in the love of God. So with that picture in mind, now I want you to kind of picture what it means to move in close to God and to allow God's big arms to wrap around you and pull you in close and just hold you tight and feel that security and that safety. Okay? That's what we're going for. That's what we're going to try to work towards. Okay? And with that in mind, let's move now back to John chapter 15, this time verse 10. Well, thank you. Okay? And guys, just so you know, this is one of those verses that can easily be interpreted incorrectly, okay, until you recognize this word abide. So I want you to kind of hold on to that, okay? But first I'll start by telling you what this is not saying. Okay, it's not saying that in order to abide, in order to get that warmth, in order to get that closeness with God, that you have to obey. Okay, that's not the reason that God loves you, and it's not what causes you to love God, is that obedience. Okay, but what it is saying is, as you follow Christ in obedience, more and more of that love will be revealed to you, and we're going to get to that in just a little bit more. Okay, but as I grow closer through my obedience, I get to appreciate what the love of God really looks like. I get to experience it more and even deeper. You know, it's like moving in. I got to move in a little bit so that he can put that arm around me and draw me closer. It's one of the things that I always pray for, especially with people that are hurting and they can't feel God's arms around them. It's a nice thing to pray for somebody else. Say, Lord, let them feel your loving arms wrapped around them. Draw them in. And comfort them, let them feel safe and secure in your love. And that's what it means to abide. So, since the commandments, that obedience is not really what gains us God's love, okay? And it's not what causes us to love God, okay? Why all the rules? Why does God lay down rules? Why does God tell us what to do and how to do it? What's all this stuff about obedience anyway? Okay, well, I want you to read from Hebrews chapter 12, beginning with verse 5. This one's a long one, so kind of if you're reading this, I think it's on at least two slides, maybe three. Okay?
And have you forgotten the encouraging words God spoke to you as children? He said, "My child, don't make light of the Lord's discipline, and don't give up when he corrects you. For the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes each one he accepts as his child. As you endure this divine discipline, remember that God is treating you as his own children. Whoever heard of a child who was never disciplined by its father?"
So, God gives us rules, and he disciplines us because he loves us. Part of love is teaching your children to be disciplined. Okay? A good father has rules for their kids. He disciplines them, and he teaches them discipline. But why? Why do I have to discipline my kids? Yeah, because that's what keeps them safe. That's what keeps them out of trouble when they're still in that age where they are not making the best decisions. And so they need a little bit of guidance. They need a little bit of leadership, right? And it allows them to develop character, which will cause them to be successful in life. The disciplines of the Bible, guys, are there so that we can become successful, so that we can live the kind of life that God intends for us. Now, you'd like to think, and I spent some time in the public school system, and there would be kids that would come in there, okay? And what I found is the ones that acted out were usually doing it because they wanted attention, okay? Kids crave discipline. And the ones that you discipline, as long as you do it fairly and you do it in love, and then they understand the reason why you're disciplining them, not because you don't like them, but because you do, and you want the best for them, they respond very, very well to that. And some of the worst kids that I ever had were the ones whose parents gave them everything. Okay? Everything was given, no responsibilities, no expectations. And you would think, oh my gosh, a kid that gets everything and his parents don't expect anything of them, they have to really feel loved by their parents, right? They don't. The kids actually experience that as just the opposite way. If you talk to them, they'll tell you the same thing. Oh, they don't care. They just want to buy me off. They don't want me to be around. Okay? And so for me, although I have to tell you, when I was a kid growing up, I really didn't always appreciate my very strict parents. I do now. And then once you have kids, and you realize how hard it is to discipline them, how hard it is sometimes to make them cry, and they have all of those ways that they can manipulate you, you know what I'm talking about? And you don't give in. As a parent, I started to realize how difficult it is to actually discipline your kids, how much easier it is just to give in and ask nothing of them. But I really grew in my appreciation for my parents and what they did for me as I got older. Right, and as I started to have kids, and I recognized what a true parent, real parent does, is they do those hard things, and they expect discipline because they care, because they love their kids. Now, guys, I have to be honest, because my home situation was a bit out of balance. Okay, my dad was extremely disciplined, extremely strict, but there wasn't much on the other side, the affirmation side. Okay, and so before I leave you with this, it's like, oh, I got to really be hard on my kids. There's balance in that. Okay, and God has a balance in everything that He does. All right, and so should we? And so I'm going to have you read part of this little parable, and some of you may be familiar with it. We're not going to read the whole thing, but it's in Matthew chapter 25. And so if somebody could read for me just verse 21. All right, I want you to take special note of this and the way that God works things, okay? So if somebody read Matthew 25.
The master was full of praise. "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together."
Okay, so here we have a situation where the master is leaving. He's given some responsibility to his servants, right, while he's gone. And when he comes back, some of them have actually lived up to the expectations. They've been responsible. And notice what it says. Okay? And the master was full of praise. I love that part. That's the thing that I didn't always get when I was a kid. There was huge expectations and a huge amount of responsibility. And it was just like, well, you just did what you were expected to do. You didn't do it. But here it says they did their responsibilities. When the master returned, he was full of praise for what he had done. Okay? It's because discipline, guys, has to be balanced with affirmation. Right? Discipline and affirmation. And notice at the end, this is an interesting part that I really like, okay? What happens if you live up to expectations? You get more responsibility. It's like, what? If I do all the things that I'm supposed to do, I get more stuff to do? Yeah, okay? But the other side of it that goes hand in hand with that is more responsibility and let's celebrate. Let's celebrate how far you've come. Not just keep correcting you, right? Correction and affirmation, right? Discipline and celebration. That's the balance that we have to achieve, guys, for parents, and we have a lot of them that have these little guys, okay? They go hand in hand. Either one out of balance, and you end up with some issues that you're going to have to deal with as they get older, especially, okay? Anyway, let's go back to John. I don't want to spend too much time there. Now, verse 11.
These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full.
So why does Jesus talk to him about discipline and obedience and following the commandments? He says, in that, you will experience joy. Okay? The things that I ask you to do are going to produce in you the joy of the Lord. Obedience plus abiding equals great joy. I want the joy that I have by being obedient to God to you to experience that same thing. Not the kind of happiness that the world gives, but true joy. And then he asks of them the hardest thing of all. Okay? The one that is going to bring the greatest joy, but also has a potential for the greatest heartache. And you guys know what I'm talking about as we read this. So let's go ahead and read verse 12.
This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you.
Hey guys, this is, trust me with this, and you guys probably already know it. A loving people is the hardest thing that God asks us to do. Yeah. You believe that?
Yeah.
It's like, and later on we're going to talk about how you deal with the ones that are pretty unlovable. They give you every reason in the world not to love them. But we don't, we are given that as an option. It doesn't say, love these, and over these you can do whatever you want. It says, I want you to love people the way that I have loved. So it's not just loving them, he says, love them the way that I have loved you. Now, can you imagine what that looks like? Some can't. Just in case you can't imagine what loving people like Jesus loved them, he goes on and he explains that very clearly in verse 13.
Greater love has no one than this. Someone lay down
for his friends. Okay, so he says the greatest demonstration of your love for someone else is that you lay down your life for them. Okay, and Jesus did that. Literally, he went to the cross. He was crucified for his friends. Okay, now, what about for us, though? The chances that you're going to be crucified for somebody else in here, probably not that great. Okay? So, what does that laying down your life for others look like for us? Well, let's go ahead and read, because I think Paul says it one of the best ways in Philippians chapter 2. So, if somebody could read that for me. Okay, and so Paul says, loving people means putting their interests ahead of your own. Okay, so that's what it means to lay down your stuff and put others ahead of you. And like I said, we're going to talk later on, not today, but later on we're going to talk about what does that look like for those that are really, really unlovable, those that would take advantage of your willingness to do for them. But that's for another day, all right? Let's go on, actually, and read verse 14, because Jesus says, if you do that, what I'm asking of you, things are going to change, okay? And so let's look at verse 14. So Jesus says, if you're willing to do that, okay, you will move into that friend category. Okay, this is where I want to spend some time today, guys, because it's super important. And since I just kind of challenge you to make that part of your resolution to plug Jesus into one of those friend slots. But in order for that, again, we kind of remind you, we need to talk about friend, because in our culture today, we use, I think, friend too loosely. Okay, it's just like everybody's a friend. You know, here's my good friend, my neighbor. Here's one of my coworkers, they're my friends. The guy I bowl with, he's a friend. The guy I would go to the dog park with, he's a friend. You know, everybody's a friend. Okay, but that's not biblically what's inferred here. Okay, for a first century Jew, you would only be called a friend if indeed they could completely trust you. Otherwise, they wouldn't introduce you as friend. They would introduce you as, this is Joe from synagogue, or this is so-and-so from the marketplace. Okay? You only get, this is my friend, if indeed they are in that inner circle. That was a special designation, right? And so Jesus is saying, this is how you move from that association category into that friend category, right? Is through obedience, all right? And abiding. That's what this whole thing is really about. And so for verse 14, and this next one, verse 15, understanding that concept of what friend really is about is super important. Okay, so you got a hold on that one? Okay, so let's move on then to verse 15.
No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you.
Okay, guys. So keep in mind where we're at. This is in the upper room. This is near the end. Okay, this is almost kind of like a graduation ceremony for his disciples. And he's telling them, just so you know, guys, you've moved out of that servant category into the friend category. Now, is Jesus still a teacher to them? Absolutely. Okay, and he'll continue to teach them. But he's saying, just so you know, we don't have that servant-master relationship anymore. You guys have come into that point where now I call you a friend. Okay, now you're part of that inner circle. Now you're plugged in to me, and I'm plugged in to you. So guys, here's what I want you to think about as we move forward just a little bit. And I'll remind you at the end, okay, I want you to think for yourself, okay, are you indeed a friend of Jesus? Have you moved into that friend category? And so here's what I remind you of what you talked about before. How does somebody get into that friend category? How do they get plugged into one of those slots, one of those inner places? Okay? Because that's super important. The same way that other people make it into that friend category is the same way that Jesus is going to make it into that friend category. Right? He's been calling disciples for a long time. They've been followers for a long time. Those guys have been saved for a long time. But finally, at this point, he gives them an affirmation. Right? And they get a revelation. You've moved from disciples to friends. Right? Our relationship is very different now, although it's going to be short-lived on the earth anyway, because Jesus is about to go to the cross. But it's something that he needed to give to them, an affirmation that he needed to give to them moving forward. Okay? And so let's kind of take a look at, and this is, helps me with my definition of friends. It's in Proverbs 18, verse 24.
Some friends don't come, but a true friend is closer than your own family.
Okay. Proverbs says, a true friend can be closer than blood, can be closer than your own family. Okay, so let me tell you about my friends just a little bit. my inner circle. And I have a few guys that are like that. I have a lot of guys that are kind of in the friend category, but I have some that are true friends, okay? I have a lot of guys on my phone, but I have a few guys that are on my speed dial. You know what I'm talking about? How do you get to the speed dial thing? Okay? Because, guys, those are the guys that meet a couple of qualifications. Number one, I know that they'll pick up, and I know that they'll respond. They're my go-to guys. If I'm in trouble, those are the guys I call. And I'll tell you something else. This is where you find the next step. Okay? Nicole also has a couple of those guys on her speed dial. Do you know why? Okay, so I don't make the call. Right? If she sees that I'm in trouble and I don't make the call, guess what? She's making a call. Okay? And also for some other reasons, too. Sometimes I'm out of town or whatever, and I just tell her, Nicole, so you know, if you run into a problem, if you've got something that's really going on and I can't be there, these are the guys you call. Okay? Call them before you call my dad. Call them before you call my brother. Call them certainly before you call any of your relatives, because I know these guys are reliable.
What the hell? Just listen to that.
No, it's true. Not that I don't trust them, but guys know what I'm talking about. There are guys that's like, these are the guys I trust. These are the guys that will come over. If you call them and you tell them that you have something going on, I let them know ahead of time. It's like, guys, just so you know, my wife's got you on the speed dial. If something happens, I'm going to be gone. It's like, I need you to and they. I trust them completely that they'll show up. I trust that they'll show up for me. I trust that they'll show up for my family if I'm desperately in need. Okay? Not that many guys that I put in that category, right, that are on my speed dial. Although I'm always trying to add more guys in there. You know what I mean? It's like Troy said, you can never have enough guys on your speed dial. I don't know how many slots do they give you on the speed dial? But they add more slots. But you know what I'm talking about. Okay? So the next thing is, again, is Jesus on your speed dial? If you find yourself in trouble, if you find yourself desperately in need, is that your go-to? Is that your first call? Or is it after you've exhausted all of the other people on your speed dial? Do you know him well enough to realize that he will indeed pick up and answer? And the other half of it is, I'm really hoping that the guys that I have on my speed dial also have me on their speed dial. Because you know, the calling goes both ways. You know what I'm saying? I'm really hoping that there's enough trust in me. And sometimes that's difficult with your pastor. Because a lot of guys don't like to call the pastor when they're really in trouble because they think that somehow they're going to get judged or condemned. Or it's like, dude, that's what you're supposed to do. That's where I judge you to be a real man, when you make the call. You know, it's the cowards that don't make the call. Anyway. With that being said, I ask the question again. Are you a friend of Jesus? Have you moved from the follower category? See, because we can get saved, and we can be a follower of Christ, we can be a disciple of Christ, okay? But it's a special thing to be a friend of Jesus. And that's why I want to kind of change the way that looks. I don't want that to have that same broad category like everybody's a friend of Jesus. There's a lot of people that are saved that aren't truly a friend of Christ. So in many ways, verse 15 is about Jesus talking to his disciples. It's almost like this graduation ceremony when you truly become a friend, when he says, you know what, guys, I'm no longer calling you servants. You're no longer in that discipleship stage. You've moved, and now we're in this friend thing. So let me conclude with a little story and then with a challenge, okay? And this is a story of a friend of mine. I haven't really seen him for a long time because he moved out to California, Okay? And actually, when I knew him, and when he became a friend of mine, I wasn't a Christian yet. All right? I wasn't saved. But nonetheless, I had friends, okay, a little bit different ways, okay? But he started out actually as a student. I had him in class, okay? His name's Paul. And anybody that I got really close to, I always nicknamed. Okay, and so his nickname and it was Weasel, which doesn't really describe him because he also played football. He was a lineman. He was a big guy. Okay, and it has a long story as well. Okay, but I had him in class. And I got to know him in a certain way, and then I had him on the football field, and I got to know him in a deeper way. I started to see him in a different light, right? Because I worked the heck out of those guys. Okay, and you see how people respond when they're in difficulty and hardship. Right? In fact, you intentionally put them under duress to see if they will respond, to kind of build them up, build up character. I mean, you do some things with your team. Okay. Now, the cool thing for me is, not only you have the coaching thing, where I got to put these kids, see these kids under stress, and see how their work ethic and some of that stuff, but I also had a summer business. Okay, I had a painting business on the side. In those early days in the teaching profession, man, you couldn't make a living on a teacher's salary, so everybody had like a second job. Okay, and so in the summer I had a painting business, all right? And I would hire kids to work for me, but not just any kids, because you take a chance with those. I screened them during football season, okay? And I knew the ones that I offered a job to, and Weasel was one of those, because you can teach kids how to paint, but you can't teach them hard work, and you can't teach them character, and you can't teach them how to have pride in what they do. Okay, those are like developed at home, way before that, or they're innately given a gift from God. I don't know which it is. Okay, but those are the ones you want working for you, right? I could care less whether you can paint or not. The question is, are you going to treat me honestly? Are you going to work hard? Are you going to take pride in what you do? Are you going to be reliable and be there on time? And those are the kids I look for. And I heard a lot of them. They're all ball players, or sometimes they were wrestlers, but I all knew them pretty well. I knew them in a different light. Okay, and then when you take the kid out of the classroom, you take them off to the football field, and now you become their boss. Okay, now you know them in a different way. Okay, and interestingly enough, okay, Weasel went on. He played football at Elmhurst College. Okay, and when he graduated from Elmhurst, he actually came back and he got a job as an assistant coach. So then I coached with the kid too. I coached the line. Okay, and so now we're kind of moving out of that. Everything before that was kind of like I'm in charge and you're not, right? And now we're like working shoulder to shoulder, all right? But it's a really hard move to make from there, okay? In fact, we were really close. I started to become his counselor. He was having girl problems, as many young men do in those days, and he would come over, how about Nicole? He actually looked for Nicole's counsel more because she knew women better than I did, but he would come over and we would give him counsel, okay? He had one of those dads that really wasn't around all that much for him, and so he was really looking for a dad. Somebody to give him dad counsel, fatherly advice. And so he started hanging around even more. He was like my kid, really. He wasn't even that much older than my boys were at that time, okay? And I was giving counsel, and we really started to grow in our relationship with one another, okay? To the point where, now keep in mind, he's out of school. I'm not going on vacations with high school kids, all right? But we went on a vacation with them, okay? With Weasel, another kid. His name was Mike. We called him Robo. Weasel and Robo came along. They were two linemen. They were big guys, okay? And we went on vacation with them, and they started to make me feel uncomfortable. Okay, you know how that you do that? When they keep calling you Mr. Lott, right? Because there was this respect thing. These guys were respectful young men. And so at school, it was always Mr. Lott. On the football field, it was Coach, right? And so we actually went to Vegas. I wasn't a Christian back then. So we went to Vegas with these guys. And I got these two big guys following me everywhere. And they're all like, Mr. Lott, Mr. Lott, Mr. Lott, you want me to get you a beer? Mr. Lott, you want me to go check on the girls and see where they're at? And everybody's looking at me like I'm somebody. You know what I mean? Like I'm a gangster or maybe whatever it was. And it was starting to make me feel really uncomfortable because everybody could see. But you've looked at the size of my bets, that I was a nobody. I didn't have any money. So I finally had to call those guys aside. I said, here, guys, here's the deal, man. You can't call me Mr. Lott anymore. Okay? We're way beyond that. Okay? You can call me Rod, or you can call me Coach. Well, they didn't feel comfortable with the Rod part. Okay? And so it went to Coach, which was okay. I was a little bit closer, a little bit more intimate. Okay? Anyway, Robo moved away quicker than Weasel did. And Weasel kept coming around. And finally, the day came where I had to say to him, I actually call him Paul, you know, as lifting him up a little bit. I said, Paul, just so you know, you're going to have to start calling me Rod because I'm not your coach anymore. You know, there's some times where I'll coach you up, I'll give you counsel like I would any other, but you've really become my friend. It was a huge revelation for him. And the affirmation just took our relationship to the next level. You know what I'm talking about? And all of a sudden, we could talk about things that we couldn't before, things that you couldn't talk about to your coach, the things that you couldn't talk about to your boss, the things that you couldn't talk about certainly to your teacher. All of a sudden now, Weasel could talk to me. And guess what? I could share more of me with him. And it became like a whole nother level of relationship. And I tell you that because that's what Jesus has going on here with his disciples. He's like, we're moving to a different relationship, a relationship where you can abide in my love, right? And where I can be more honest with you guys. I can share everything that is going on with God, and I can trust you with the responsibilities of my kingdom here on earth. That's a big responsibility. The guys on my speed dial are ones that I trust with my wife, I trust with my house, I trust with my kids, I trust with everything. Not everybody gets to that place. You know what I mean? But sometimes it's nice to be able to affirm that. So you recognize where your relationship is. And I hope those guys aren't doing it just because, you know, they think they owe me. Or because I'm their pastor. You know what I mean? It's a whole different kind of obedience, right? It doesn't come out of love, then it comes out of something else. And Jesus is saying, I want you to be obedient out of the love that we have for one another. And so, as I conclude, I'm just going to ask you, have you had that breakthrough moment with Christ? Where you've moved and your relationship goes to a new level? If you're interested in that, guys, you have to do it the same way that you did with the other people that are friends in your life right now, that you trust with your wife, that you trust with your kids, that you trust with your stuff, okay? You have to invest that time. You have to open up. And when you get there, I guarantee you that God will give you that affirmation, just so you know you are indeed more than just one of my kids. Yes, one other thing, when you have kids, man, most of you guys have real little ones, but the coolest thing was when my kids, my boys, went from being my boys to also being my friends. Now, am I still their father? Do I still talk to them sometimes like I'm their father? But our relationship has grown, and there's just something really, really cool about going from that father role to that friend role. Not that you ever give up the one for the other. Okay, just because I'm a friend of God doesn't mean that I don't still have that respect. You know what I'm saying? He's still also Lord. He's still Almighty God, even though he's my friend. And I still have that respect level. That's what you teach your kids. Okay, but it's cool when that relationship changes. Okay, and that's the point, guys. We go all the way back to the very beginning at which you can truly abide in the love of Christ. There's nothing like it, and that's why I encourage you, make that part of your resolution to move that relationship that you have with the Lord closer, okay? Not that you become saved by it, okay? But you get to experience a greater joy as your relationship changes. Cool? Okay, that's where I'm going to stop. But as always, we are going to do communion together. And communion is on one of the ends of the row. So you could take one and kind of pass it out. Now, Scripture tells us that we should never do communion lightly. And there's always a risk of that when you do it every single week. You guys, I don't ever want that to happen with you guys. And I've often told the story, but I'll just do it real quickly again. After 9/11, the law in Illinois changed in the schools. Before that, we'd kind of done away with Pledge of Allegiance and praying and all that. And after 9/11, they reinstituted the Pledge of Allegiance. And every classroom in every school in the state of Illinois was to begin the day with the Pledge of Allegiance. All right? And the very first time we did that as a school, they came over the intercom, And we went through it literally word by word, line by line, and explained exactly what that pledge was all about. It was the most moving and one of the most powerful experiences I had experienced and the kids in my classroom had experienced. Okay? The problem was that we never came back to that again. And every day we did the Pledge of Allegiance, every day. And even the next year, when we continued on, it never went back at the very beginning to remind us of what that was about. Okay? And little by little, over time, and doing it so often, it just became words that you said. It just became something that you did. And the kids would stand up, and they could recite the thing and without even thinking about it. It was just like blah, blah, blah. It might as well have been anything they were reciting. It had lost its significance. Okay? And we're cautioned in Scripture never to do that. Paul tells us, before you do this, examine yourselves. Understand what it is that you're doing. Don't ever let this lose its significance. Okay? And that's why I need to remind you guys every so often of that, guys. We need to make sure, okay, that we reflect on what we're really doing. Okay? The significance of it. And a little bit of self-examination. And so that's what we're going to do right now. We're always going to take just a minute and just kind of self-reflect and think about what it is that you're doing when you take the body and blood of Christ. Okay? So let's take a couple and do that.